Hey Tiger, this podcast contains language and explicit themes. Hey hippies, the light of God in me sees and honors the light of God in you. Here we are. Welcome to This Body, a podcast about being in a body, and welcome to this series on yoga ethics for modern living. I'm your host, Sophia, rabble rouser and yoga practitioner and instructor, and I am coming to you hopefully loud and clear from a place of pre-election tension in Los Angeles, California. Oh, we are just a few days out from what is being touted as the most important election ever, aren't they all? And I'm feeling quite stressed. So I thought this is a good time to get immersive about my spiritual practice and lean in to my roots a little bit. I may have strayed somewhat. I started this podcast in December last year with an eye on this election. I wanted to stay calm, and I thought doing a podcast would provide some kind of framework for my mental health as my third American election looms. The first and second ones just about killed me, and I'm not even kidding. It was something I had never experienced before. I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy. Not even kidding. But yeah, I once more find myself anxious and unclear about everything. Despite my best efforts, the devil falls with the best laid plans. And just like the last two times, I'm kind of keyed up. It's the same but different. We're living in a time of dubious ethics and much distrust in one another and our leadership. Families divided all over the country. That's not very good.
Jesus Christ.
And so I think this is a very prime time to shut out outside influences and shore up our ethical muscles. So I hope you come along on this journey. If you don't want to miss a single thing, you can sign up on Patreon, patreon.com/thisbodypodcast, where I'll drop extra things here and there. You already get two bonus episodes a month, which really turns into more than that because I like to just do extra episodes over there. So you're guaranteed those two episodes a month. And then I don't know if I'll put this whole yoga ethics series out on the free feed. I think I'll do a few, and then I'll probably put most of them over on Patreon, and deeper dives into spirituality and whatnot will probably go over there as well. So if you like this, go over and subscribe. But before we delve in, let me orient to time and place. The Dodgers won their first two games against the Yankees at Dodger Stadium in Echo Park this weekend. On Friday, I decided to become a Dodgers fan due to the very exciting and hilarious feeling in LA as the games approached. I don't understand what's going on in the World Series and who's even involved and how many games there are, but I just thought, why the hell not? Let's just get into sports.
For the West Coast Don, Ice Cube!
Yay, yay! Last week, people in East LA were stopped in the streets. They were letting off fireworks, jumping around in lowriders, chanting, and just generally being hilarious and joyful. The side of danger. This is the LA way. And you got to appreciate what the Dodgers mean to this city. Like I said, I only just decided to become invested in baseball, but I can tell from the amount of energy and camaraderie that's coming off the pavement that this particular World Series means a lot. And the fact that it's New York versus LA, it's too classic a rivalry for me to sit out. So I watched Friday and Saturday's games, and whilst I had very little idea about scoring and what a walk-off is, I really enjoyed the spectacle and all the hot guys. Now, I'm a Dodgers fan. I'm a steady hand. I'm a Dodgers fan. But aesthetically speaking, I think I like the Yankees' outfits and colorways more. And there is a particularly hot guy on their team. It's just an observation. I've been living in LA for a decade now, and I think that officially makes me a long-timer. I think so anyway. A lot of out-of-towners can't handle this city beyond a few years, so it's a point of pride for me that I can not only handle living here, I like it for the most part, and I survived the pandemic here, which means this place is in my veins forever because I went through a lot. So yeah, the Dodgers fucking killed it. Ice Cube also killed it when he opened the second game by changing the lyrics of Bow Down to intimidate the Yankees, and then rounded things out with Today Was a Good Day. It was so epic. In New Zealand, our national sports teams typically begin each match with a haka, a Māori war dance, which you've probably seen online. It's become a real viral calling card, and it's very unique and emotionally charged. In LA, they send Ice Cube out there to freak out the opposition. It was really cool, and the Yankees were all smiles too, so maybe not quite as bone-chilling as the haka, but strong nonetheless. One complaint I do have is the ads during the game. What the fuck? What in the fuck? We got a few moments of the game, and then an ad for Ozempic, and then a cartoonish Trump ad about how much he hates transgender people, and then an ad for Harris trying to present a balanced campaign, and then back to the Dodgers, and then back to Ozempic. And it just went on and on like that for hours.
Jesus Christ.
In other news, I had an appointment with my gynecologist the other day. If you're a new listener, let me tell you about one of the main focuses of my middle-aged life. Perimenopause, bitch. I'm obsessed with replacing the hormones my body is running out of. Yeah, I'm not going the natural route. Miss me with that? Anyway, my gyno is a really sharp woman, and thank God for that, because I am just so sick and tired of having to school various medical professionals on things they have no training in at all, like perimenopause and menopause. Anyway, in addition to the estrogen and progesterone I've been taking, I'm now on a topical testosterone. And I'm so excited about this. I don't think testosterone is funded for use in menopausal women, but it is for men, of course, because men are more important in every way, and their boners and stuff are just the number one priority of everyone and everything. So what that means is I have to fork over $60 every month. That's about $100 New Zealand to get this testosterone treatment. So cool. You finally stop having to pay pink tax on tampons, and then they slap you with treatment that is a million times more expensive, and they fuck us again. I'm grateful for the prescription though, and so far it's been about 5 or 6 days. I think I'm feeling a bit more emotionally stable. I will keep you updated on my hormonal journey. Oh yes, you know I will. Okay, so ethics, yoga ethics. Let's talk about it. Ethics are guidelines for behavior in order to maintain a healthy social structure. You can't just run around doing whatever the fuck you want. Most human beings have a moral center inside of themselves. I think not all. There are a few freaky anomalies like psychopaths and serial killers, some sexual offenders whose moral center is either deeply corrupted or doesn't exist at all. But I would say about 95% of humans, if I'm being generous, instinctively understand right and wrong. Whether they uphold ethical standards is another thing entirely, but most people know the difference and know inside of themselves when they're messing up and being antisocial. And by antisocial, I don't mean introverted. I mean,
it's bad for the people.
When we're young, most of us live in our parents' homes, and we are taught and absorb our parents' ethical teachings. And they might kind of conflict with one another. You know, the parent that tells you one thing and does another. And that shows us that ethics can be a real challenge to uphold. Maybe we think it's BS. It can also make us angry at the hypocrisy of our caregivers. And when we become teenagers, we're in a space of pushing against our parents' shortcomings. Then we leave home. And we have to go and build our own lives from the ground up. Little children are generally very compassionate and very close to the heart of things. I don't know a child in my life that wasn't deeply disturbed upon finding out the origins of the chicken nuggets their parents served them, for example. But the older we get, the more nuance we perceive. And often there's so much confusion about the way the world actually is compared to how it feels it should be that we get lost in the mire. There are tools inside of yoga that support an ethical life. There are tools inside of all spiritual traditions that facilitate this kind of seeking. But more often than not, other human beings gatekeep this stuff in order to gain power. There isn't a religion or spiritual tradition that is free from power-hungry grifters who gatekeep what's useful and make people think that we need to pay the troll under the bridge to gain access. Through charisma, through aspirational thinking, like wanting to be like someone else, this stuff, this yearning, this looking outwards, creates the conditions for the power-hungry to hijack our journey and divert us, sometimes all the way off in the wrong direction for thousands of miles, and sometimes people never find their way back. So this podcast and the series I'm going to share with you is meant to help you remember yourself. Inside you is a little flame. It's always there, just burning inside you. This flame is in everyone. Well, almost everyone. It's pure. You don't need to be able to memorize great screeds. You don't have to quote scripture. The application of ethics can get complicated, but good ethics can't be subverted and made into the opposite, though Trump has given it a good bash since he launched the Age of Misinformation in 2016. As a yoga girly in the land of bullshit and charlatanism, LA, Hollywood, I have experienced a lot of weirdo groupthink. I personally am not partial to big groups of people, though of course I understand the human need for community, obviously. I just need to know, where are the exits? How long is this going to take? When am I leaving? I don't want to have a group orgasm in a breathwork class, for example, and then be spat back out onto Figueroa over to the coffee shop back into my normal life. That's weird. I want to go about my life with clarity, sanity, groundedness. After the chaotic life I had when I was young, wild family, They were all characters, all charismatic. I was and am always seeking homeostasis, safety, clarity, sanity. We're all vulnerable to manipulation, so the first thing I'll say about ethics is that they're both personal and universal, and you actually already know how to act. But things get foggy. The weather is always changing, and it's just useful to get granular about this stuff from time to time, just to remember, to focus, to maybe map out our course and follow the routes that we've already tried and tested, whilst being elastic enough to change course and be skillful if the tide changes on us. So we're going to talk about the yogic commandments, if you will, the yamas and niyamas. What is that, you may ask? The yamas and niyamas are the first two limbs of the Eightfold Path of Yoga, which comes from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. The yamas provide a context for interacting with the external world, while the niyamas provide a context for the body and our inner spiritual life. Together, these principles are often described as moral codes or a path to right living. The yamas are moral values and the niyamas are practices that we personally observe. And today we're going to talk about the first yama, the first moral value in yoga, the first jewel, which forms the foundation for all yogic thought in conjunction with the second yama. So the first yama is ahimsa, which loosely translates as non-harming, non-violence. Ahimsa goes hand in hand with the second yama, satya, meaning truthfulness, which we'll get into in the next episode. But it's important to say that without non-violence, truth can bludgeon a person. You know that saying, if your best friend can't tell you you're fucking up, who can? Well, when that best friend applies the truth without non-violence, that can be a friendship ender. Trust me, I know. So it's a way of communicating that allows for resolution as opposed to punishing. Ahimsa and satya go together as the first two jewels on the path of yoga. And yoga, a yogic lifestyle, it is not easy. It is really demanding. It's described as the warrior path. Ahimsa, non-violence, informs everything going forward, kind of like the first commandment, thou shalt not kill. You can get into all kinds of arguments with people over the Bible, but if you're following the commandments with integrity, it is a pretty unshakable foundation, even in a world that is severely out of balance. In The Karate Kid, do you remember? Are you as old as I am? In The Karate Kid, Daniel asks Mr. Miyagi when he's going to learn to punch. Miyagi says, balance first. Balance good, karate good. Foundations are essential. We bolt our houses in California to secure them for what we know will always be a fact of life here. Earthquakes. Non-violence must begin from our foundation, ourselves. Only when we've mastered non-violence towards ourselves can we master it in our relationships with other people, animals, living things, the environment. So the warrior path starts with self-love, self-compassion, non-violence to self. The vast majority of people have some unresolved trauma stuff, and if that's not addressed, it will cause harm and violence to other people. Many of us have experienced the neglect of our emotional or physical needs, or have been parentified as children, or abused in some deliberate way. And if you had wonderful, loving parents, they definitely fucked you up in some way, because that's just part of being a parent. That's just how it goes. The way people talk about trauma these days might have you believing it was just invented. I'm not diminishing childhood trauma. I'm saying we need to illuminate it and see what we're holding and where we're holding it for ourselves and for the betterment of all society. That's yoga's goal, a union first within ourselves and then outwardly to all living beings. It's not easy. It is doable. Action is required. Simply marinating in the TikTok trauma algorithm isn't actively doing anything except marinating. The physical integration of yoga concerns the body. Yoga is an eightfold path, and one stop on that path is asana, the physical poses of yoga. Now, asana is about 100% of what Western yogis participate in a studio setting. If that's all you know of yoga, the poses, the body, you're certainly not alone. I feel like it's actually gotten worse, not better. I could go on and on about the erasure of the other elements of the yogic life, but not today, Satan. It's a very big discussion that I'll save for maybe its own episode. Physical practice forms a bridge between the body and the mind, and the breath is a powerful tool here. When we become adults and are tasked with the responsibility of building our lives, we begin with the foundation our parents or caregivers gave us. Our body is the house that we live in, so we must learn to trust our physical responses, like noticing the clench of a fist, a shiver up our spine, churning in our guts. And that's why asana practice is so powerful. But we gotta know that it's only a small part of yoga, an important part, but the physical work we do in yoga is in service of meditation, really. A way to connect to the body, to settle the body, settle the nervous system in order to sit in meditation. And that has nothing to do with anyone else. It has nothing to do with $100 leggings or a flat stomach or long limbs and sexy posts on Instagram. That's literally nothing to do with anything. That's some other thing. Capitalism and vanity and social media and aspirational bullshit. It's how it all starts to get subverted. So, yeah, there are some strong physical practices that have been used by fake gurus to get people to follow them, like Kundalini yoga or Bikram style hot yoga. This kind of practice, it causes this really huge physical release, and it's a fast delivery system for the Western seeker. Beyond that, in the Yoga Sutras, there's talk of spiritual superpowers like going invisible or levitating, and there are some people who take that literally and some who take it figuratively and some who think it's a manipulation tool to get people to practice yoga. The manipulation in this case is kind of seen as almost a benign thing because it's in service of the higher purpose of liberation. And that's one of the very interesting philosophical discussions had within spiritual and intellectual groups of people who find this topic interesting. Initially, there were no choreographed vinyasa classes. There was no flow. There were just a handful of poses to embody for the sole purpose of settling the body for meditation, going within and staying there with yourself. Fast forward 6,000 years, and by and large, meditation is pretty much gone from yoga classes. Even Shavasana, the final resting pose or corpse pose, is decentered. That pose is essential to allow the body to integrate all the work of the practice, but some Westerners on the go find it annoying. When I was in my early 20s and my late teens, I would often roll up my mat and leave before Shavasana. There's a lack of understanding about slowing down to the rhythm of your breath, which is the rhythm of nature, which is your lifetime. Busy people would rather get their yoga done and get that big dopamine rush and charge back to their busy lives. The high that people get from physical exertion and breath practices makes them think they're doing something. But the original idea seems to have been to move the body enough to disperse its grosser energy in order to be able to sit still and still the mind. Chitta vritti nirodha, stilling the fluctuations of the mind. It's not the same thing as the peaceful dopamine that you get after sex or a rigorous Kundalini yoga class. It's much less flashy. It's a winding journey through different landscapes rather than a ride on Space Mountain. Space Mountain is off this world, and so are we, and we can still enjoy thrills and spills, but let's get real about what we're doing and why. That's what yoga helps with, getting real.
Be real.
The breath is our bridge between body and mind, and in asana, physical practice, we use the breath to integrate body and mind. That's it. Union, bringing together the pieces of ourselves, our bodies, our minds, our experiences, psychological body, emotional landscape. We have emotional reactions on the mat because integration is a profound experience. The teacher just holds the space and facilitates the class. They're not there for any other reason. And honestly, yoga teachers aren't qualified to go beyond that scope. I think it's good to remind people of that. LA yoga teachers can really be tripping sometimes.
How do you know what's good for me?
That's my opinion!
Babes, if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to rate, share, and subscribe. You can listen on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music. And you can find me at Sophia Forever. The pod's on IG too. Thanks, Tiger. Suffering and mistakes allow us the chance to refine our skills, just like we refine a pose on the mat. So it's like a mirror. Your physical journey and your asana practice, it's like a little play on the mat from start to finish. And it teaches our mind to refine things. There are ways in which we inadvertently cause violence to others. When someone we care about is going through it, we may wish to fix it, we want to take away their pain, but we're not God. And that's not our job. And furthermore, we can't do that job, no matter what our opinion of what that is. It's simply not possible to change a person. All we can do is be with them and their suffering and trust that their journey is theirs and they're on their own path. But getting back to ethics, it's important to have an ongoing relationship to our ethics. Sometimes we fall out of relationship, and our ethics are our touchstones for this life. Ahimsa gives us a foundation for our lives, a foundation from which to explore what it is to be in a human body. The yamas and niyamas are about reframing, basically choosing what you're going to pay attention to. It's how we pay attention, choosing how to think about what's happening, the fabric, the backdrop, the air which we breathe. An ethical framework gives us the ability to choose how we respond and how we see things. And it's about being skillful in what we take in. It's really hard for me. But hey, at least I'm trying.
Why not worry will make you sick? I've never seen it accomplish anything. I've never seen worrying about anything change it. So I decided not to do it. If you can't do anything about it, why the hell worry about it? Every negative thought you have releases poison into your system and will kill you or give you cancer or tumors or whatever else you can think of. So if you're thinking negative about anything, erase that.
Worrying about others is a form of violence because you're saying you don't trust the other person's ability to navigate their own lives. To worry is a misuse of our imagination, and our imagination is such a potent tool in our lives. And to worry is a roadblock to the other person's growth. To approach someone with your worries for them is to create a tight little container of anxiety and fear. To approach that same person with love and support, it's breezy, it's expansive, it provides conditions for that person to stretch and grow. So worry is violent. Love is not. Love is ahimsa. The journey to learn how to love can be difficult. And sometimes it's really easy and it's like magic. There's a lot of mystery to love. Oh my gosh, you guys, if you like this show, you should join me over on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and join up for extra body. You'll get early access to episodes, 2 bonus episodes a month, random drops here and there, and access to old seasons. And it's a little more savage over there. It's just like the free podcast, but juicier. So go to patreon.com/thisbodypodcast. That's patreon.com/thisbodypodcast and sign up for extra body. You'll love it. Thanks, Tiger. Developing trust and belief in those we love often leads to disappointment, but worrying about them is no way to live. So worrying is violent. Worrying about what someone else is doing, waste of time. Even for parents who have a responsibility to their children, worrying is a total waste of time. That is obviously a really massive challenge, I can only imagine. When I find myself freaking out and worrying about things that may or may not happen, I try to recall a time in the past when I worried about stuff that never happened and didn't even imagine the bad shit that did happen. It's never what you worry about. It's always just some unforeseen disaster that fucks you up. So don't sweat it. Don't worry. Don't worry about the specifics. It may just never happen. Just be prepared with a go bag and hope for the best. Ahimsa works best when we're cultivating compassion. Compassion in the Christian Bible is something that is described as being felt in the bowels. The Bible uses compassion sparingly due to its visceral intensity. Compassion moves us across the boundaries of established norms. You forget yourself to answer the cries of another. It's not self-serving. So part of the spiritual journey is self-analysis. Is it compassion or is it worry and violence? Every person walking this earth has endured difficult things. Every single person has trauma. Every single person has something inside of them that you can't relate to, a suffering that is foreign to you. No one is without trauma in this life. So thinking your job is to save and soothe, it's nice, but it's a fool's errand. That kind of action is in service of the ego. Instead of scorekeeping and compartmentalization, yogic union guides us towards limitless compassion. It is not personal. It's universal. Compassion gives us a feeling of resource, expansiveness, and grace. It can help you get unmired from guilt and ego. Having an ethical framework that can give you the energy and the capacity to move through life skillfully is a true boon. Compassion is central to being honest, and that's why ahimsa and satya, truth, go together. When we lose our sense of right and wrong, we don't know how to interact with the world. Our responses, our actual neurobiology, can get corrupted and scattered. Your gut instinct may get wonky. Life gives us experiences that don't make sense. Common sense things like honesty and not stealing and not fucking someone's husband. Society, our sick capitalistic society that doesn't value humans at all and gives human rights to corporate entities, that is the soup that we're swimming in. We can live our whole lives in the dark. The light of truth, it lights up the path. It makes the sun rise. Society's influence, social media, capitalism, aspiration, This creates dissonance in our bodies and our minds, and it gets confusing. It interrupts us at our core. A really obvious example is prosperity gospel, as taught by some Christian churches and by many psycho-yoga gurus like Yogi Bhajan, a charlatan who made up Kundalini Yoga as it's taught in the West, all these shysters who came to California to lead white seekers into prosperity gospel, but it is a total subversion and perversion of the OG teachings. Christ certainly wasn't into being a capitalist pig, and the Bible clearly states that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. And yet, right now on earth, we have Trump and Musk ministering to millions of struggling Americans, and those economically diminished groups are lapping it up. So it's really easy to see how the wave of the masses can pervert our moral and ethical compass. Don't believe the hype. Speaking of Yogi Bhajan, there's a new documentary series on Max right now called Breath of Fire, all about Kundalini Yoga in the West and the absolute bullshit artists involved, starting with Bhajan and ending with this dork, Katie Griggs, who had Kate Hudson and Alicia Keys and the entire west side of LA thinking she was a guru called Guru Jagat. Yogi Bhajan and Katie Griggs are both dead now, thank God. Sorry to your families. But society's better off without that kind of duplicity. Breath of Fire is an extremely enraging watch for me, but I do highly recommend it. I was in LA when Katie Griggs was doing her bad thing, and I took a Kundalini course under the guise of helping incarcerated youth through yoga. I didn't realize until I was in the room with no AC at the height of a scorching LA summer, surrounded by vacant hippies in white robes, that this was a Kundalini class. Both of these try-hard gurus were really into being rich as a reflection of spiritual enlightenment. That is so fucked up, and it's the wave that we as a society in 2024 are drowning under.
Jesus Christ.
The spiritual journey is not linear. It's a spiral path. Think of a DNA chain. It goes round and round like a slinky, always moving forward, but it's not straight ahead. DNA is nature's fabric for our existence. We don't always walk in our grace, obviously, and that's where having a framework, beginning with non-harming, helps to hold everything together and keep ourselves in line. It's not called a higher power for nothing. For example, I was at an acai bar the other day, and for some reason, all acai places seem to blast annoying techno dance music as if we're in Ibiza and it's the 90s. I hate it. I ordered my acai bowl to go so I could get the fuck out of there, and the guy behind the counter took forever to make it. All the while, I'm losing my shit because I'm highly irritable and the music is at a bonkers decibel level. But obviously, to have a fit over something like that is stupid and childish, and I reminded myself to be cool and chill. I wasn't feeling particularly nonviolent, but I chose not to be a dick. Look at air travel these days. Pilots having to remind passengers not to go apeshit on the plane. People screaming at each other and going full Lord of the Flies the second they get to the airport. What is wrong with us? We need to have personal standards for our own behavior and uphold these standards, or else we end up with politicians with a lust for law and order, and that just sucks. We don't need law and order. We need nonviolence and truth. We need personal accountability. Since 2016, truth has been on the chopping block. But look, just because everyone jumps off a cliff doesn't mean you're going to, does it? Most New Zealanders would say no. Not so sure about Americans these days. Anyway, yoga for modern living, that's what we're talking about. And modern living is highly political. We're not always going to have clarity. We come in and out of clarity as life presents new challenges. Ethics are metaphorically a surfboard on which to cut through the waves of fear and confusion. And anyone who's ever managed to stand up on a surfboard and dance on a wave
that would ordinarily dump them hard on the shore knows the absolute joy of a skillful ride in this life. Each challenge is a new beach. Buying a gun is not going to help you ride skillfully or dive down deep. A gun is an admission of terror and an all or nothing mentality that will snap your board in half on the rocks and render you scared and paralyzed on the sand if you fetishize that gun and think of it as something more than just an object. No one has it all figured out. Humility is a jewel. The wider culture encourages us to grip on and be immovable, to not change our minds and to calcify. Ahimsa is fluid. It's the marrow in our bones. It's our surrender. It's our vulnerability. And we have to have that in order to integrate and learn. We have to have a beginner's mind. So how about the other living beings on this earth? In Jain Buddhism, it's a very old form of Buddhism, practitioners take it to the extreme, being careful to not even harm an ant. They tread very lightly on this earth, trying to do no harm at all. So what of the voiceless ones, the beings harvested with violence and cruelty for our consumption? My grandmother, who is a Bible basher, used to argue with me about my righteous teen vegetarianism, saying that God put the animals on the earth for us to eat, and I would stubbornly take it back to the first commandment, thou shalt not kill, stating, it doesn't say they shouldn't kill humans, it says thou shalt not kill. By the time my Nana passed away, we were very, very close, very loving, very compassionate and expansive with one another. And to this day, I feel a stab of pain when I remember the emotional violence I committed against her when I was a know-it-all teen bitch. I was truthful, but I was not non-violent. We challenged each other, and though that regret is there, I know the struggle led to walls breaking down and a huge rush of love and understanding to come into our lives. So there's space. There's space for regrets. But the overarching lesson is no rain, no rainbow. No labor, no newborn. We're only human. Let love be the whole of the law. Guys, thank you so much for joining me for this episode on Ahimsa and yoga ethics. In the next episode, we will explore truth, or satya. Truth often hurts, no matter how you deliver it, so you don't want to bludgeon someone over the head with it. It hurts anyway. So we try to balance love and truth to create enlightenment. We try. Okay, see you next time. Be good.